all be thinking about the Patriots. It's not time yet. So you've heard that the theme for February is trust, following up on the heels of possibility in January. Ruth Gendler wrote a book called Book of Qualities. She writes about all kinds of different words. She kind of frames stories about words that we use often, but sometimes don't know how to frame or hold on to. She suggests that trust is the mother of love, the daughter of truth, hence the sermon title this morning. We have to think about that a bit. Maybe truth is here as the elder, and then trust, and born of these two, love. I think that's the possibility she's suggesting. And I'm imagining that it may be that, yes, we love what we can trust to be truthful. Though experience tells me it is likely that love is also a bit reckless sometimes. Otherwise, poets and songwriters would be out of business. I came across a couple of country music classics. She made toothpicks out of the timber of my heart. Isn't that great? He walked across my heart like it was Texas. Or from the other side of the dance floor, my head hurts, my feet stink, and I don't love you. Who comes up with these? Really? Really? You have to Google them. But to be honest, I have found that this trust topic, I found it to be both engaging and challenging. There is a lot written about trust, and yet we know that very little of it matters when we have been the one who feels betrayed. When you are the someone whose trust has been broken by maybe someone in your family or by a friend or by a coworker or by a partner or even the local shepherd whose job it was to protect the sheep, when we are the ones who've been hurt, it hardly seems to matter why. The idea that there may have been a reason. The child was bored. Or he didn't have a clue how to do his job well. Or he was seeking attention that he wasn't getting at home. We just know we're hurt, and the proverbial sheep are gone. Trust, we know, can be hard to build and easy to lose. As I was pondering these thoughts, I was remembering the Stockhausen last week that Yukiko shared with us, the image of Sisyphus, right, rolling that ball back up the hill, back up the hill. I think I trust you, I think I trust you. And it falls all the way down the hill again. So what is it anyway? What does it mean to trust someone or something? As a child, we might trust a parent, for example, or a teacher. Primarily, I think, because the dynamic is such that a child needs things they can't provide for themselves. And the adult, or anyone older, actually, appears the provider. Adults are ostensibly the holder of whatever truth we think exists as a child. It may not always be true, but for a time, it's what we believe. In fact, it turns out the typical dictionary response to the word trust suggests that trust is all about belief, that we have a belief, a firm belief in the strength of someone or something, in their reliability. But as we get older, we recognize our own capacity to discern truth. So perhaps we adjust our beliefs. Experience may teach us that life is a bit more nuanced, so that the idea of trust may have more to it than belief on its own. So Charles Feltman is an executive coach and wrote a book called The Thin Book of Trust, an essential primer for building trust at work. He takes a different approach to the dictionary. He writes primarily about work environments where he suggests that trust is defined as choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. That's a lot to absorb. Trust is defined as choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. In other words, what we might come to understand as we experience life is that trust is a choice rather than a straight-up belief. So let's imagine that in Feltzman's context, for example, the workplace, we may have an idea. Do we trust that we can share this idea without its being ridiculed? Or worse, perhaps, can we trust that it won't be stolen by someone who might claim it as their own? Do we trust the environment to be one of mutual effort? Or do we trust our coworkers to be honest with us about the value of our idea? Are we choosing to risk sharing our ideas based on what might happen to it? Trust is, Feltman suggests, a kind of risk assessment, which actually feels like a definition that might move beyond the work environment pretty easily, at least in the adult world. That is, someone who can choose to risk something of value by making it vulnerable to another person, something like one's heart, for example. Right off the bat, it begs the question, of course, how much can my heart withstand if things don't go as planned? And what bank of compassion or forgiveness is available to me if or when someone falls short? If or when someone falls short. And here's the biggest challenge, I think. It's not likely a question of if or when someone will fall short. A coworker, a family member, a friend, a partner. The truth is that what we learn as we live a while is that we are all imperfect, we are all cracked, broken, full of holes, however we might describe it. So that it is more likely we will disappoint in some way. We will fall short. We will break a trust. We will speak harshly when we meant to soothe. We will ignore when we intended to notice. We will forget another's needs in deference to our own. I don't mean to oversimplify this idea. There are those who have experienced more than the average breach of trust in relationships, those who may have been egregiously abused or misused by those they should have been able to count on. Anyone remotely connected to the Me Too movement, for example, has experienced a different level of betrayal, and I don't mean to infer any lightness on those experiences. But even on some very fundamental level, we humans will likely be less than we had hoped, less than we might want to trust ourselves to be. Even, I think, what we might imagine as the holy, what some of us would call God, even that spirit will disappoint us. I guarantee it. Job knew it. He lost everything over and over again, remember? Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel wrote a story about putting God on trial, the rabbis in the concentration camp arguing that God was guilty, and in fact, they did find God guilty right before they began their evening prayer. But it doesn't even have to get that bad or that extreme. It can be a much smaller betrayal that we might hold life with a capital L accountable for. Losing capacity of some kind, losing a loved one. There are a plethora of challenges that we rail against having to survive, that we rail against having to make sense of. Age, not least of all. How are we to understand the very idea of trust in the face of reliable disillusionment? Brené Brown, many of you may have seen or read or heard as a sociologist. She speaks about all kinds of things. She offers an acronym for what she calls the anatomy of trust. I think she likes acronyms because it allows her to remember the elements she's talking about. So this one she calls braving. It stands for boundaries, and she infers knowing healthy ones, reliability, accountability, vault, by which she means keeping confidences, integrity, choosing courage over comfort, what's right over what's easy, non-judgment and generosity in our assumptions. So that spells out braving. If someone maintains each of these elements, she suggests, they are trustworthy. That is trust. But I couldn't help but wonder who of us is on task with each of these things at each and every moment. Let's just look at non-judgment, for example. And let's just think about politics for a short moment. That's a relatively risk-free environment to consider, right? Have you felt inclined to do any judging lately? And then how can we trust someone who won't not to judge us if we've just heard how harshly they have judged someone else? In truth, we judge all the time. How about generosity in our assumptions? How often do we look beyond the obvious for what we're so comfortable being critical of? The poor shepherd just wanted some company for afterthought. I listened to a report about the governor of Virginia this morning. Did anyone else hear this? There are some pictures that apparently have been put in the public venue from his medical school book. They're not flattering, one person in blackface, one in a KKK costume. I'm not defending what might be his offense. I'm just pointing out that our inclinations are to go to a place that judges, and how quickly we go there. Sometimes it feels that in our longing for the wholeness we each desire, we each yearn for, or maybe because of what we have already experienced by way of breach, we build up an amazing set of expectations of each other, a list as long as our arms that we can't or won't abide doing without. And by the time we decide to risk trust, we often have this list in place. And we wonder if it's worth our effort. When who among us is that perfect? Let's ask ourselves, and you don't have to answer out loud. Do you hold yourself accountable for every time you don't live up to your own expectations? What do you require of yourself when you might behave, let's just say, impatiently with someone you really care about, someone you really love, but you just weren't quite up to that high bar that morning? Does it make us untrustworthy or just human? It feels to me as though trust, being, as Ruth Gendler suggested, the daughter of truth, is also caught up in a bucket full of expectations that we may create to protect ourselves so we won't be hurt, when really to trust is to allow oneself to be vulnerable, because we trust that we can manage that risk. Perhaps to trust right from the start is to allow oneself to be vulnerable in a messy, imperfect world with messy, imperfect people, even the best ones. Remember Jan Stevenson's words this morning as she recovers from the untimely death of her husband, surely a breach of her trust in life. Perhaps for now it can be enough to simply marvel at the mystery of how a heart so broken can go on beating as if it were made for precisely this, as if it knows the only cure for love is more of it, as if it sees the heart's sole remedy for breaking is to love still. Maybe it is a function of how we are trusting. Maybe it means trusting not that those you might want to trust are infallible, that you, my friend, my family, my partner, my God, will never do anything to disappoint me, or that I will never do anything to disappoint you, but that we trust our own capacity to manage that breach. Because if we can't trust our own inner capacity to heal, and perhaps even to offer healing, even as we know the truth of our own imperfections, we're not likely to risk much. And there's not much wholeness to be found there. Maya Angelou often quoted an African proverb, "Beware the naked man who is offering you his shirt." How could we possibly trust others if we don't trust ourselves? And like the chick coming out of the egg, the discernment to trust, the choice to be that vulnerable, is our own individual work. No one can make that choice for us. As David Anderson reminded us earlier, if the task of life is to break continually out of the shells that confine us and into freedom, that is a solitary task. I love the song that the choir started us off with this morning. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I imagine as we heard it again during our meditation, I think we all want to be that presence. At some point in our lives, we want to be able to offer that to another or to many others. It is our inherent relationality, and what a gift to ourselves to be able to offer it. When we can trust that what we have to offer is strong enough for what another needs, we can risk trusting that another might accept it. It starts here, where our truth lies, waiting to bear a trust that leads to love. Here, where the persistent pulse is the rhythm of a blessing we cannot begin to fathom, but will save us nonetheless. May we marvel at the mystery of it all. So may it be. And amen.